Welcome, everybody, to Paradigm Shifters. And I have a wonderful paradigm shifter here tonight who is Richard Newton from England initially, but now from all through the universes and solar stuff and so on. But Richard talks to horses. Can you believe it? So, welcome to the show, Richard. We have a lot to talk about tonight.
Thank you. Thank you.
What's your favorite thing? I know you were an actor, a thespian, and a singer, and all-around bon vivant artisto, and a printer.
Well, it's part of the, what do they call it now, the body of work. You know, it's all part of tapping into that creative heart of life, really.
Yeah, you're a real Renaissance man, too, eh?
Yeah, could be. Yeah.
I think it's really exciting. So when you were showing us this picture, which for people at home might be a little bit difficult to see, but it's a beautiful kind of a sepia print of a horse, but that what he shows is a window that peers through the, right?
Yes. But that's like artistic license, because I took it with the window of the room is in the background of the horse.
So well, it's really fascinating because you talk to horses, you talk about their other lives and so on. Yep. Like, so you have a window into, I thought it was a beautiful metaphor. So thank you for that, you know. But you said that one, that was around the turn of the 1900s.
Yes, 1900s. This, ladies and gentlemen, is Ambush the Second. He won the Grand National in Liverpool, England, for the Prince of Wales, or the then Prince of Wales, son of Queen Victoria, in 1902.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is a pencil sketch of the same horse. And it's really quite something.
It's beautiful, huh? So let me just jump right into the heart of the matter and say, Richard, were you able to speak with this horse's soul or tap into his persona or any of that kind of magical stuff?
I just get that he's practically a guardian, checking in that I'm doing what I'm meant to be doing.
Oh, good.
I don't get a lot from him as far as like feedback, but he's glad to be seen. You know, and I think that sort of ties into our own stories. We deep down want to be remembered. Doesn't matter what about. It's just that all our stories are valuable, not just, you know, celebrities. You know, we all have valuable contributions to make, but because we don't make a big pizzazz about it, or the media doesn't make a big pizzazz about it. No offense, media. But,
I think you know that in many healing traditions, they say that when we're seen and known for who we really are, we get a healing.
Whoa.
And then what you're saying, I'm going,
yes, yeah.
Isn't it true? We like to say, Richard, it brings you forward and we get to know.
Yeah, the real person, you know, and also finding, you know, to be able to speak your truth, not somebody else's truth.
Right.
Your own truth, so you can express it and
I'm
be
really
accepted.
Excited. Yeah, not only accepted, but I think if people accept your truth, as you put it, you come up with more blooms on that particular tree.
Yes, yeah.
I don't mean prevarications. I mean like, you know, people stoke your genius and you get better at it, you know.
Word of mouth.
Tell us about horses and how you got involved with horses.
I'm a farmer's son, grew up with horses back then, a few decades ago. They were really sort of beasts of burden. I didn't have the connection with them than I do now. And over the years, I kept my horse connection. You know, the universe had its way of giving me a kick to keep in contact with them, even though I didn't physically touch them after I left home very much. And it was after How Life Is, and I came to doing my master's in Chicago in 2003, and I'm done, and I'm walking out of the train station, and I can literally feel the presence of a horse on either side of me. I'm leading them. And then my mom's voice is going, well, you got to take care of the horses first. The theater will follow.
Mom was on the other side at that point, right?
This is true. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, oh, so when do we listen to our mothers? And I do. And I come back to the Bay Area and try to do theater. And the doors literally slam in the face like, and no. And I'm okay, what am I supposed to be doing with horses? And I was thought, oh, well, I could, because I'm now in the States, not in England. So it's a different ball game of how you approach working in a stable and all that good stuff. And so I did found a couple of rehab ranches where I could go and volunteer just to, and I just did grooming because that's really all I knew safely to do.
Sure.
And people would comment, I'm not just grooming afterwards seeing the horse. You've changed the horse. He's different. And I put it down to elbow grease. And a cloth and the brushes and all that good stuff. And then a long story short, I realized it was energy and also the massage and listening to them. Because they taught me a lot without me even going to do classes. Or they reminded me of what I already knew is probably a better way of.
But were you already quite intuitive before you started doing any of that?
Not knowingly, no. Mm-hmm. No one had actually said to me, you know, you're intuitive type thing. I probably felt it, but not made a big issue about it.
Or maybe didn't trust it.
Yes, there's that too. And then
when you're walking out of the train station, you've got an invisible horse on either side.
Oh, yeah. And I totally got it. You know, it was like, wow.
And you didn't say, oh, my gosh, am I losing my mind?
Nope. It just seemed accepted.
Wow, that's really good. So then
the gut feel felt right. That was when you ask of intuitive and the gut feel. They're sort of, some people are probably saying I'm lying, but the gut feel and the intuitive thinking about it, I probably had a long, long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because I put intuitive and gut feel together now. You could paint a pretty picture of things in my teens and say, oh, this is going to be wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And my gut's going, no.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that the artistic, because you're very artistic as well, right? You think the artistic and the acting and the
intuitive, oh yeah, all work together.
They all work together.
Work together, yeah. Yes. And they all fed a different part of the same picture.
And also, I'm going to jump right into other lives for you. I know we're going to talk about other lives for horses, but do you feel like it also came from some of your own soul history from way back?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
When did that start showing up?
Only sort of really in my American life, because I've lived here nearly 30 years now. So, you know, that's where that's come from. And meeting other horses and going, wow, I know you. And it would be like, bam. And I'd say, one horse I met was, we'd been together in the Crusades. And we're talking way back in the 1200s or the late 1100s. And mm-hmm. I would do work on him, thought, well, no one's ever taught me this. And he'd be going, oh, thank you, thank you. Just knew it. Mm-hmm. And he would take me back to that time too, which was a bit scary because I became this sort of my way or no way, you know, if you don't believe in this, you know, here's my sword and take this, you know.
Yeah.
So that was a bit scary, but I also got then insights into how other people ticked even in this time and how I had this great compassion for these people who still try to operate like that, you know, like convicts and murderers and stuff, you know, and no offense to them, but that's their journey. But it's still, I got a sense of that single-minded, how focused and driven that they are.
It's really interesting. So you actually could be embodying an aspect of yourself way back in time.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And so the horse that you, on the Crusades, the horse that you were in association with, that's a horse you know in this lifetime. Is that right?
Yes. It's called Solomon.
Uh-huh.
Big, sort of like gray. You could imagine him pulling a carriage, you know, like, or a gun carriage, because he's big, square, and solid.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling to think that the horses have soul life, just sort of like we do, and mm-hmm. how many times we've encountered. Were there any other ones that you've encountered from your own soul history? And then what's the other part of the question is, does that help you in this life complete a sense of your own consciousness in that life?
Yeah, and I think this healing is involved too. You know, mm-hmm. when they come into our lives, even like a dog or a cat, there's a past connection there usually. And they know your history way more than we know our history. And so they come in and help us release stuff. And we also get to heal them. And, you know, it's a two-way street.
Hmm.
Just by sitting and stroking the kitty, you know, and how they like having their ears worked with. Well, that's helping them heal. That's helping their body temperature and their digestion. And
it's all energy, isn't it? It's
yes.
All,
yeah.
It's sharing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So when you got out here and you weren't going to be an actor anymore because you were not getting recognized, how did you get into the horse biz from there?
Well, I discovered you could go to massage school for horses, and there are various rounds. There's the bunch I went with was Equinology, and they're up in Petaluma. And they were actually, at that time, had just started teaching the Brits in Britain at university how to take, you know, animal husbandry and horse massage and all that good stuff. And I mm-hmm. thought, if they're teaching the Brits in Britain how to do this, they've got to be good. Because the Brits are not going to put up with any old person showing them how to look after their horses. So that's where I headed off and did my certification there. And in the process, I discovered there was lots sort of horse therapies. There was Tellington Tea Touch with Linda Tellington Jones, which for me was way more intuitive, and whereas the Equinology was way more practical, and you were learning the medical terms and all that good stuff.
Well, Tellington Touch is a lot like acupressure,
In a way, yes, but you don't need any, you don't need to know where the acupoints are, the acupressure points are. You can start anywhere doing tea touch on it, you know, as long as the horse or person likes it. You can just start.
Work has just taken off in this country.
Yes.
And
it's so light, it's so non-intrusive.
Mm-hmm.
And very comforting, very bringing you into, you know, into your heart.
Mm-hmm. When did you start? I mean, is that where you started communicating with horses?
I think it was the communication part was probably still there. It was always there, but I didn't have something to, you know, glob it onto. So it was very much a, oh, they're telling me something. Or I'd touch the horse's shoulder and I'd get this image of how he'd hurt his shoulder. And the owner would be there and I'd say, well, try this. Or the horse is telling me it walked through the door and the wind blew the door shut and he got frightened and reversed back and then banged his head.
Is he speaking in words or is it thoughts that are being projected?
That came in like a little mini movie.
Oh, wow.
I just got this flash.
Were you bowled over? Was it exciting?
Two or three seconds. And I'm going, did that really just happen? And so I just, because we question everything we get in our head sometimes going, that. And it was just came in. Wow. And I want to ask
a really plebeian question here, which is back a ways, you, in this discussion today, you said something about when you were on the farm, you were just, what did you call the horses? They were just not plugs, but they were
beasts of burden. You know, they were there to be fed and kept clean. And my cousin would ride, my mother would ride, and they competed a little, and we'd go to shows.
But I want to say that somehow England has a reputation for very elite, very streamlined horses with pedigrees and so on. And is that, that doesn't...
I didn't grow up with that, no. That the pedigrees now are way more important. You know, they're more known. But back then, it was horses on the track that had the pedigrees. So that's what drew me in first to the horses. When I found all this lineage on the page, and which then went on and helped me at school, because old money in England had most of the horses, probably not quite most of them, but then they were all, and the horses were named after like the Romans, the Greeks, anything ancient. So the mums and dads became like the new Greeks and new Romans. And when I went to learn that at school, it was already implanted because I'd learnt them.
So it's like you had a history lesson through the souls of horses in a way.
Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah, because
then your story about the Crusades, I go, oh my gosh, you know, you actually lived.
Yes, yeah.
And awareness.
Yep. And I've had horses I've met in this lifetime too, where I've said, I know you from somewhere else. And then the owner has gone and said, yeah, and you pulled him off a battlefield and saved his life. And I mean, we all just go, and shed a little tear, and the horse just stands there and goes, yes.
I know you, and we're not going to tell each other. So what's the deal with horses? Are we just like them? They have a tremendous intelligence, which has not been recognized so much as it is, I think, beginning to be currently, right?
Yep.
Am I right about that? Do you think thousands of
years... I think animals in general are way more intelligent than we give them credit for. They have so much to teach us because they're operating from a totally different space than we are. Mm-hmm. They don't have all the head stuff that we have. And so they're much more in a sort of a, how do you say it here, theta brain or theta brain?
Yes. Yeah.
They're floating around there, which is like the meditative space. So when you're around them, they're attempting to bring you to that space, and where healing and trauma can happen, you know, trauma release can happen and healing can happen.
Mm-hmm. What is healing, Richard? That's a cheeky question, right?
Healing. Well, I better rephrase the word healing. Feeling better, releasing old stuff that medicine doesn't get to. Aiding you to release. Sometimes it's muscle pain, and then you work on that muscle pain and go, but I'm feeling connected to this, or people get taken back to a different time or when the damage was actually done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's big. You know, that you can bring that up and at least air it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and often once it gets aired, then it can like go away. It's like as if you're forgiving or sending the pain some love and light. Mm-hmm. Or positive energy, whatever you want to call it.
Again, recognition, right?
Yes, yep, and not just dismissing it. You know, you whack your elbow on the door, and usually you just swear at the door. You know, you get mad because you hurt yourself. Well, how did I do, you know? But you look at the door or stub your toe. How could you? And so you shut that area down by treating it like that. But if you go, oh, I'm sorry, you know, wake up, Richard, get in your body, Richard, breathe. Mm-hmm. No, right. And by doing that, you acknowledge that the elbow is part of you instead of shutting it out. So you shut out the blood supply, any energy that goes there, because you're sort of like cold shouldering it.
Mm-hmm.
By ignoring it, we ignore so much like that.
Well, we usually do it because we make the assumption they don't know what we're talking about, really.
Yeah.
How else do you hear them? Do you ever hear them just say, like, hello there?
Oh, Richard? Yeah. I've had, like, I get sort of dreams sometimes and they'll show up like Mr. Ed, you know, with the split door open.
Yeah.
And they're like, and they're just hanging out in their sort of world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And they actually use language?
No, you just get it from their look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their eyes are soft. They're not annoyed. They're not, you know, and then I might get a head nod in the dream. But it's the way the top door opens. and there's like a Mr. Ed type character going, oh, yeah, hi. Or even asking, when am I going to see them? Or sometimes when they've passed and they'll just sort of, they'll walk out of the stall and keep going. And then I'll hear the following day that they died. You know, they moved on.
So if you've run into, I want to ask you a whole bunch of things. Like, you start working with people and horses. I guess one of the questions I have for everybody at home is it getting easier for horses to communicate because more people are paying attention to them?
I think the opportunity is there to speak to them more. I won't say that they're getting through to everybody.
Oh, of course not, you know.
But definitely the opportunity, I feel. I mean, I think of the barns I've been going to for the past sort of 5-10 years and to see how people have changed in their attitudes. And I think that's come from just doing what you're meant to be doing, what I'm meant to be doing, and seeing the changes in the horses and how they've changed.
And I mean, how do horses respond to you?
Oh, if I'm not working on them, the whole barn wakes up and says, oh, there's Richard, get him over here, get him over. I've got this little bit I need touching right now. They're doing their best with pawing at the door or whinnying or seriously.
So they recognize you in a big way.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And are you using strictly the Tellington touch?
I use Tellington touch. I use acupressure. I use Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of my work now, I'm just a channel, and we do this dance. They show me where, once I've got through the introductions, they'll show me what needs working on.
Hmm.
And I'll start from there. And then especially if it's a new horse or a horse I don't appear to have known in another lifetime, they'll have got the memo from the others who've worked on them. They all know. They've all had the memo. Oh, he's the guy you need, type thing.
And their communities are carefully organized, aren't they?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yep. You talk a bit about that. I think it's really touching.
Yeah, I've had, like, even when horses have moved on. And I remember one day I didn't go to the site. I stayed at the barn. I was sat at the table and I was probably beginning to nod off, if the truth be known. You sort of get into that quiet space. And there was some leaves on the table and there was no wind. But the leaves moved and I heard the rustling of the leaves move. And I looked up and went, oh, is that you? And then down the barn aisle, all the horses were like snorting at nothing, as apparent nothing. But he'd come to say goodbye. Aww. And he was going and saying goodbye to his buddies, because that's why they were snorting. They couldn't see anything, you know, physically in our world. But there was definitely a presence there.
Hmm. Do they agree?
Sorry?
Do they grieve?
Yes, I would say they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, I can't prove it.
Mm-hmm.
But feeling and seeing how when horses move on, And, you know, you see the empty stall. And some horses I've known have, like, gone like this to me, like, as if to say, look over there, there's an empty stall type thing. Have you seen he's gone?
Wow. And they recognize them. How long did they normally live? Do they live, like, 40 years? Or?
That's pushing it. I would say, on average, I want to say 20-ish. But depending on their aftercare and all, you know, their history, and they can live 30. I think I've got one horse that I work on. He's around 33, 34.
Oh, good. Yeah.
That's a good age, because that's like, they say on average about three of our years for
one of them.
So he's in his hundreds.
Wow. So let's get into some cases. Let's talk about some specific horses that either you've failed with or succeeded with or learned about other lives with. You know, can you tell us? Your stories are really interesting, and you have certainly toured the times with horses.
Well, I've where to start?
I remember one about a horse that's name is Chief in this life.
Ah,
do you remember that story?
But he's indelibly stuck in there. He's not going anywhere. I was at a Tellington Touch training on the Wyoming Montana border.
Okay.
Yes, or near the border, and I know I've very connected to the Crow Indians, but I don't think, according to ancestry, I have no Native American blood in me, but that doesn't mean anything.
Your soul might.
Yes, but really feel connected to the Crow Indians and crows as birds also.
Oh,
but,
really?
So that's another story. But so I was up there, and it was like the first evening. It was June. It was, you know, it was daylight for quite a long time. And a bunch of us went up there to try our T-touch skills and just hang out with the horses. So there was a lady was with me, went up there, and she's of Wiccan extract. Nice. So she walks over to this big iron gray horse, and she bows to him and all that good stuff, the ritual of it. And I'm going, wow, she's really, you know, like respecting here. And so she was over there. I was working on a horse, and he was just hanging out, and I was doing work on him, and he was quite happy. And then she comes back across to me and says, that horse, she said he's very lonely, and that he reincarnated in this lifetime to save his people. And he's a chief in the horse's body. And then
I didn't know we could move through species.
Well, he was incarnated, because then he could protect his mesa, which was his old home.
Right, okay.
So he could come back and do this.
Mm-hmm.
So that made it sort of flash by, well, these horses, some of the people of the Indians too, you know, the tribe. But that's another story. So
yeah,
then,
it's magical, you know.
Yeah. And then
then
he came across to the horse I was working on. So that made like a triangle. And I'm going, I don't know any of these horses. I don't know what this is about. There was no sort of, because, you know, but it was a very sort of intense moment, or it felt intense, as if, you know, something passed across. There was no squeals. There was no kicking. None of that. They just stood there like two rocks.
Wow.
And then they disappeared. Well, then the following morning, we talked to the farm manager, and she goes, oh, well, that's Chief. So he'd been christened Chief as well as being a chief.
So the message came through his beingness.
Yeah, really? Yeah. And then, cut a long story short, the day we left, we went back up hoping that we might see the same horses. And Chief was at the gate, but for once he wasn't on his own. He had like a cadre of horses around him. which was good. You know, he wasn't this solitary, lonely soul anymore.
Right.
And I said, I'm sorry, I have to go. And he sort of like bows his head and there's like, horses don't cry. But this huge teardrop came down one eye. And he had like this sob in his voice, in his throat, like as if he was sobbing. And, you know, said the farewells. When I get on the plane to go home and where, you know, when you're in that half awake, half sleepy state waiting for a plane to take off. And,
I sure do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I get this whole scene come in of, it's just a desolate mesa. No horses, just lots of sobbing and sighing and black smoke. You know, like at the after fact of, you know.
Wow, a war kind of
yes,
thing.
Yes. And thought, whoa. But then I come out and all these lenses come, like each, as if I'm coming through dimensions. I'm coming through all the lenses close off.
Hmm.
And I'm actually looking through the horse's eye, but of course it's Chief's eye. I'm seeing through Chief the horse, but are you still with me? It's like a bit.
Yeah.
And all these lenses are closing, and I'm going, whoa, I've just been taken off to some, you know, another time and place.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you find, was it very informative for you?
It just felt right.
Mm-hmm.
And then another angle of the story, which we don't have time to talk about today, was another horse that I know as a racehorse in the 30s. He was actually in one of his lives. I had a dream of him carrying me home, thrown over the front of the horse, like as if I'd been killed in an Indian, you know, something or other. And I was being carried home over the front of the horse, and he was taking me home, as that was the tradition. Wow. You know, the horses would take their pilots home, basically, if mm-hmm. they'd been killed.
So they were real looking after, they were really supportive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They still are, aren't they?
Oh, yes. Very loyal.
With the one from the Crusades that you spoke of earlier, have you, is there a kind of a theme that you're carrying through lifetimes with the certain horses? Have you got any experiences like that?
I don't know about themes.
Like war or
crusades? Well, definitely the Crusades. I bet, like I've seen myself on, like in cavalry, in, you know, on being part of a cavalry and being dressed in like Russian uniform or Cossack uniform. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but on modern day horses, which I found fascinating.
Hmm.
Meaning horses that I knew.
You mean so that the vision came?
In this lifetime.
Yeah. So you knew the horses in this lifetime, but you had known them in another lifetime. Okay?
Must have. And I've had one riding lesson one day, and I'm on this paint horse. It's hilarious. And I'm cantering, and somebody drops me chainmail on me.
Oh, you know? Wow.
And I'm in a jousting match. I'm in the same sort of canter as if I'm in a jousting match.
How exciting. Wow.
And I say to the trainer, I said, I'm in a jousting match. And she said, well, that's very nice, Richard, but we're here now.
Settle down. But actually, what was it like? Could you feel like the jousting thing?
I could feel the spear in my arm, and I'm in this really sort of ploddy canter, which was such like you're like running at something, you know, but you're on horseback.
Wow.
And I'm sort of stilted because I've just had all this weight put on me for chainmail. And the armor, but it was
how heavy it was, right?
Yeah.
do you ever write little stories or poems or anything about your experiences there?
I haven't so far. I mean, I've recorded things about the horses, but I haven't written anything. You've like made notes and stuff. I haven't.
You still just love them all?
Yep. Yeah, and I think one day the horse stories will come through because they want to be remembered too. Their stories need to come out, you know, and be heard.
I love the idea that you know them through other lifetime. I mean, it's not something a lot of us would think about, you know, but it's a really important that they're on a soul theme like you are, you know, that we're on a mission to get some understanding or learning in our world and so on. It's very exciting, right?
But it's definitely different. It's not your everyday dinner conversation.
I think it's a tremendous service, you know. It must be teaching you a great deal about healing. What about people that you've known that have been healed as a result of these experiences with horses?
Well, I think that's ongoing, truthfully, whether they believe it or not. Because for me, they offer love unconditionally to us, regardless of where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And we, of course, have all these conditions. You know, all that. If you don't do that, I'm not doing this, but, you know, and all that good stuff. And it's, they're probably just
dogs and cats. Did you ever see Horse Boy or read that book?
Yes, I read the book. Yes.
Wasn't that, did you enjoy that?
Yes, totally. Oh, yes, I did. I could totally get it.
Yeah, and for people who haven't read it, we'll talk about it for a little, just for a minute, because it's a tremendous healing story, isn't it?
Yes. He went off to Mongolia and took his son out there.
And his son was only, what, 3 or 4 at the time?
Yes, yeah, yep.
What was his diagnosis? He was terribly autistic, I think.
Autistic, yes, yeah.
And he cried, screamed all the time, remember?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the father was a filmmaker and the mother was a therapist.
Yes, so he had good background to go.
But that was the interesting thing, is because of the great background,
yes,
they were surprised that he had all these difficulties. But the adventure.
That was part of the journey, I think, too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because people had to see that, you know, to buy into it.
Yeah, and of course, I was shocked by it. It was so good.
Yeah, and of course, horses. And anybody who's sort of mentally, even physically challenged, the horses talk in pictures.
Okay.
And the kids that can't speak properly, or what we think, don't speak verbally the same as we do, they also talk in pictures. So they find a like mind that actually gets them. And invariably, verbally, the first being that they talk to is a person, you know, is the horse,
right?
Like even just simply saying go.
It's interesting because I think you were the one who told me about some people who might have a physical infirmity of some sort.
Yep.
And they get on a horse, and the horse, yes. I think you've got more of that story than I do.
But yeah, they have the horses have the same walk patterns as humans. So if you can't walk, or say you've had a stroke and lost the use of a side, or, you know, a leg, that can possibly help without having to do, yes, there's physical therapy and all that other good stuff going on. But it can trigger, it can help trigger the nerves to, you know, bring back the use in the leg. And even with some children who don't appear to have any sort of, they're like bendy toys, you know, they can't stand, they don't have the strength to stand up for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, hey, you can put the child on the horse and in the shape of a cat, and they don't know what a cat is, and then the horse will move and the kid is supported by, you know, being held in place as a cat. And then say 3-4 weeks later, I know I'm making this very simplistic, but the child will know how to be the cat on the horse and won't necessarily need to be supported.
Do you think it actually teaches the body to move with?
Yeah, it breaks through muscle memory and all that good stuff. You know, yeah, it's
pretty magical, huh?
Yeah, because like the Tellington touch work hits at a cellular level. So you're reminding the cells of what they used to be.
Wow, yeah.
You know, seeing their perfection instead of seeing the negative side, or what appears to be the negative side.
So who calls you now to come in and work with the horses?
Quite a few people. You know, it's definitely been a word of mouth.
And do they call you to ask if this horse that they want to bring home or to the stable is appropriate? You know what I mean? Is it about getting involved?
I rarely get calls of that nature, but I will get information from the horse after the fact to say, well, whether they like it there or not, or what happened at previous barns, all that type of. And then down the way, I mean, I had an incident. It was an incident in a way. I was asked, the horse was stiff, had a stiff right neck and right shoulder earlier in the week. And she was in a riding lesson and her trainer was riding the horse. I went out there. And even though I couldn't feel the changes, the trainer could feel the changes going through the horse as the horse released. And then she could adjust her position in the saddle to help the horse release properly. She didn't she'd sat there like a bag of potatoes. The horse couldn't have released, but she adjusted her seat so she became lighter in the saddle. And we all like went, and there's the horse releasing. And then she went back into her lesson, sort of.
Isn't that, Richard, isn't that a communication right there?
Well, yeah, to have a rider on board who could actually feel it. I've had like riders on the ground can feel the changes when the horse releases when I'm working on them. Hmm. You know, without touch, they'll both release together, which is quite wild. You know, they don't.
Tremendous awareness then, isn't there? Like a lot of times we don't think they're as aware as they are.
No, but it's when you see the owner going, oh, there's the release, and then the horse releases. I had one this morning where the horse went out and totally mirrored the trauma of a gentleman. And it was exactly, he's the owner of the horse, not the rider of the horse. And both of them were so in sync. And there I am working on the horse in the identical. Obviously, it's the owner is not in a horse's body, but and there he is releasing as the horse releases.
Wow, it's interesting because following that theme, I'm going. I remember being in a group of horses, right, and a group of people over here, and the horse chose who she wanted to work with.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And it was highly effective. It was very effective.
Yeah. And usually they will hone in. I know some of the bigger therapy sessions, say you have 10 horses and 10 people. Well, then during the day, you will get chosen in some way to work with X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. And there'll be no halters, no accoutrements or anything.
Right.
And by the end of the week, you will have had to have hooked up with the relevant horse. And usually, if you think of the likes of Linda Kahanoff and all her work.
Yeah, I went to one of her workshops, actually.
Yes, Tao of Equus. Mm-hmm. They are like, invariably, the horse will have something similar that's buried, you know, buried consciousness in the person. And by the end of the week, between the therapist and the horses, they will have cracked something that the client per se may not have even known about. You know, it was just totally.
You're saying it would be subconscious.
Yeah, just yes. And it was big trauma.
Wow. It's very exciting, isn't it?
It's amazing, really.
And I haven't studied enough of her work, but doesn't it somehow tap into the shared consciousness of the entire.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's a very exciting subject, too.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to take it all, Richard? That's wonderful. You're an actor. You're a Pisces. You're an empath. You're an artist. You're all these things, but you can go talk about merging with consciousness and creativity. You've got so much of that, you know.
We did do, we, when I was volunteering, I, at Stanford University, we did do a show with humans and horses, which was fascinating. It was a student project, and we wrote it and performed it with four horses. And of course, it's the famous line, don't act with children or horse or animals, because they'll upstage you. And we had, we had to fire one of the guy, one of the horses, because he was a total humor person, merchant of the highest order.
What an attention, did he?
Oh yeah, yeah. And he would, like, first time he got himself out, and then the second rehearsal he got the horse next door to lean a certain way, and the whole, like, corral collapsed. The whole set vanished.
Did people laugh or did they freak out?
Yeah. But it was a rehearsal, thankfully. But I mean, it sort of throws you, sort of, what, you know, you go out there thinking, well, we're going to do this tonight. But the horses had other ideas. But it was
and
the way
actually
that,
big enough to take charge, too.
Yeah, big time. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it was about communication and the show. So it was sort of funny.
Yeah, you didn't give up on it, did you?
No. We were given another horse who I was supposed to be standing really serious, stood next to. And all of a sudden, he realizes I do body work. So we're in this sort of very quiet end of the show. And he keeps shoving his shoulder into my hands, wanting release, you know, and sort of, and I'm going, I can't do that right now.
Yeah. But you love it, don't you? Huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm their advocate, you know, and they know that.
Yeah. You're never going to quit.
No.
Mm-mm.
No, I don't think I'd be allowed to quit. Even when we changed barns once, and I was a bit reticent about traveling further than I need to travel, and the horses just said, "Hey, you're coming with us."
So, what kind of advice do you have for people who are listening and want to understand more how they can participate?
If you've got the patience, in the big picture, go and hang out with them. I mean, obviously, be safe. Mm-hmm. You know, you could find a horse you connect with in a barn and just take a chair and sit outside and just hang out and have some basic questions to ask. Mm-hmm. Like, how are you today? Is there any way you're in pain? You know, that type of thing. And then notice how your body responds. You might get soreness in a part of your body you never get sore, for instance. It's very subtle, you know, and we're
so raised. Is that triggered by the presence of the horse? I mean, like, if you get soreness, you had.
Well, it's, you know, how thoughts come in and we're questioned about, well, where did that thought come from? What does that mean? Blah, blah, blah. Just write them down. Don't censor any thoughts you get. Don't censor any body feelings you get. But you may have to do it for a week before you really hear anything. You'll hear anything. Because that's the slow sort of, again, just hanging out with them. Because mm-hmm. they've got to get to know you, how your heart ticks, you know, how you are mentally, where you're at mentally. You know, if you're not breathing in and out when you're doing this, you're going to get nothing. Because
mm-hmm.
you're not in their world respecting them or meeting them. And even if you've had a bad day, as long as you admit you've had the bad day,
yeah,
they'll work with you. But if you're like la 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 la, but inside you're really hurting, they'll either reflect what you're really feeling, you know, by behavior,
mm-hmm.
or they'll just totally ignore you. Say, why should I bother with you?
So back to our little group where you've got a group of people and a group of horses, and the horses know who to select.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know what to ask further about that. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
Is that they can sense the pain or the imbalance.
Yes.
It could be the personality. What could it be?
Yep. All and more. It's one of those, where do you put your finger? You know, it's okay. Well, it could be your body posture that they recognize. It could be, are you even in your body? And they may not be in their bodies. You know, some of those Linda Kahanoff cases were brutal, you know, with what had happened to the horse, what came out in, you know, after the fact.
I haven't read that whole book, but I must do, because that part of it was
really it's very interesting.
So like humans, they need to get not rid of, but integrate the kind of traumas they've had for thousands of years, right?
Yep.
So this, to me, I'd go, well, there is a mass consciousness coming up in animals these days as well as there is in people. You know?
Yep. And I think a lot of the, from what I got told one day, that the nearest to humans are horses, cats, dogs, and elephants.
Really?
And their group consciousness is when, you know, they pass on, say a horse passes on, well, they go back to their horse consciousness and they discuss how they were treated by humans.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then they ultimately, if they want to become human.
They go through the reviews that we talk about,
Yes. Yeah. And if they want to come back as a human, they've had, you know, they've got so much there to, well, this is how this family treated us or that family treated us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they were abused, they come probably back as an abused person. With similar hang-ups to get through.
Do they arrive in the same geographic area usually, or?
That I don't know. I do know, though, that my mother's horse in Liverpool showed up in Half Moon Bay.
Oh, really?
Yes, about 10 years ago.
Wow.
And I knew that, thought, this feels like my mother's horse. And so I'm asking him, are you Kim? Were you owned by a Virginia Newton? You know, and I'm like, and of course he's going, the critic on the shoulder is going, no.
Oh,
and then, because I'm giving him a massage in this lifetime, and he keeps looking at his feet. Oh, you want me to work down there? So I'm in massage mode, not really in communicating mode.
Sure.
And so I go to work on the feet, and he pushes me away. Then he does it again. And I went, oh, I get it. He had really bad front legs as Kim. Oh. And now he's got nice front legs.
Wow.
And I shared this with the owner, who I never met in person. And she said, send me pictures. So I fished out pictures of Kim, sent them to her. And she said, oh, yes, they've both got the same hind end.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, that geographic thing, you know, is I'm on the west coast of America, and he was in Liverpool in my last lifetime.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Richard, this is a lot to think about. And anytime you've got more stories, you come back on, because it would be a delight for people. I love the idea that you're kind of in tune with, I don't know, the rapport between the drama and the relationships and stuff and the evolution of the being, which we're doing as humans too, right?
Yeah. And I've, even when I now act, I have a whole different process with acting, because I'm really listening and looking at the other person. Not quite like a horse, but it's made it much more aware.
Like I said to you before by text, gee, I hope you come riding in on a horse.
I'll try that for next time, yes.
Yeah, why not? Well, I think people, you're bringing the nature of the horse into a better rapport with humans by the way you're talking about it and the way you're acting with it. It's marvelous, darling. Anyway, how would people get hold of you if they want to bring you to work on their horses and so on? Or put you in a play.
Yeah, put me in a play. By email, it's chard1, as in Richard, at hotmail.com. Or you can text or call me on 650 773 5028.
And I also know it's your birthday tomorrow. So happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Mom.
Thank you so much for being a paradigm shifter. You're really touching a lot of people. And I know that people's brains and comprehension changes when you're working with the horses, not just the horses, but the people as well.
Yeah, people. Some riders definitely that don't appear to be that aware will all of a sudden start going, I've just released something in here and you didn't touch me. You know,
isn't that great?
So
you're waking people up to many of the levels of themselves.
Yes.
Well, don't ever stop, Richard. We're not done yet. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you.
We'll
talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye now.